Upon the death of a loved one, unfinished business seems to always follow. There's something that's got to be done. And on the last day of Moses' life, the Lord had declared through him that a celebration of the people was to be held across the Jordan River when they arrived at a place called Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And the instructions for that celebration are found over in Deuteronomy chapter 27 and chapter 28. Now, with the victory at Ai complete, Joshua led the camp to the two mountains that are adjacent to the land of Shechem. Shechem is just an open field. This land belongs to Jacob. It has belonged to Jacob for over 430 years. Actually, it's 470 years. It has belonged to Jacob. And so a city will be there, be built there one day, but it hasn't been built there yet as of this time. They show up just to an open field. And it rested just about 20 miles from Gilgal. So we are not told if Joshua moved from Ai straight north up to this, directly up to Shechem, the Shechem area from Ai. But it does not seem that that's possible, because all the people needed to be at Shechem in order for this celebration to take place. And that also included some of the tabernacle furniture, like the altar and that type of stuff. So the camp must have moved to Shechem from Gilgal instead of to Shechem from Ai, but that's this celebration. And then that camp would go back to Gilgal for much of the remainder of Joshua's ministry. The people, women and children, all that will be in Gilgal, while the men of war will go out, and that will be their home base. So with that, we pick up in Joshua chapter 8, at the end of the book, in verse number 30. Well, I'm calling this the truthful campaign in Israel, or the truthful campaign of the Promised Land, because it has to do with worship. It's not a campaign to conquer, it's a campaign to worship. So they had to make their march there to march like as they would. They'd travel in the caravan to get there to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, and from they're going to be there. And so when they get there, it is a time to worship. And so an altar is to be built, and we see that altar being told to be built in verse number 30. Then Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, in Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the sons of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses. An altar of uncut stones on which no man had wielded an iron tool, and they offered burnt offerings on it to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. Will Joshua follow the instructions from Moses exactly? The offerings were also followed according to Moses' directives expressly. All we have to do is to go to Leviticus chapters 1 through 7, and we know how to do the burnt offerings. We know how to do the sacrifice of peace offerings. So with the altar built, the offerings occurred. And Moses also had ordered a very interesting thing. The writer tells us that Joshua did exactly what he was supposed to do. The writer tells us that the law was copied there onto stones at that place of the altar, verse 32. He, being Joshua, wrote there on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written in the presence of the sons of Israel. It tells us right there, it was Joshua who wrote this law down in the presence of Israel. So the writer also tells us that in accordance with Moses' instruction, the leaders were gathered there too, verse 33a. All Israel with their elders and officers and their judges were standing on both sides of the ark before the Levitical priest who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, the stranger as well as the natives. So now we know they had to go back to Gilgal to get this furniture, this altar, this ark, to have it there. So the tribes are then described in verse number 33b. Half of them stood on Mount Gerizim, half the tribe stood on Mount Gerizim, half the tribe stood on Mount Ebal. just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had given them commandments at first to bless the people of Israel. Moses laid out. Moses even told us in that lesson over in Deuteronomy, here's the tribes to be on Gerizim, here's the tribes to be on Mount Ebal. Moses laid them out, and so they are following those instructions. And when all was ready, the writer tells us, the law was read. After Joshua wrote the law was read in verse number 34. Then afterward, he read all the words of the law, the blessings and the curse, according to all that is written in the book of the law. He read Deuteronomy. He copied Deuteronomy is what he did. So then the words were read and the words were heard in verse 35. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel with the women and the little ones and the strangers who were living among them. The record of the foolish ceremony is back there in Deuteronomy chapter 27 and 28. They're all recorded. It was all truthful. And it was a truthful and important campaign in the nation's life. They needed to hear. Here are your blessings. These are your blessings that are going to happen to you. Here are your curses. These are the curses going to have to happen to you if you break these laws. If you break them. And by the way, they've all been fulfilled. Well, not all of them have been fulfilled. Some are still waiting to our future be fulfilled. But Israel has when the Lord gives a warning and says, if you do this, I'm going to do this. We find it here in these blessings and cursings. God means it. He didn't put these blessings and curses in just in case. He put them in there because He knew the future. So from the truthful campaign, the writer tells us and begins to tell us of the thorough campaign of the promised land. So they've had their worship time. It is over. This is all we got. If you want to know the whole worship time, go back to Deuteronomy 27, 28. And from that, the writer is moving on because he's mentioned it and he knows it's back over there. And now he's moving from this truthful campaign of worship. He's moving over to the thorough campaign of the promised land. It will start with the conquest across central Canaan, followed by the conquest of southern Canaan, and then the conquest of northern Canaan. We begin with the conquest in this lesson of central Canaan, and we begin with that and with the Canaanite kings who are going to unite, and that's in chapter 9, verse number 1. Chapter 9, verse 1. Now it came about when all the kings who were beyond the Jordan, in the hill country and the lowlands and on all the coast of the great sea towards Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivites, and the Jebusites heard of it, that they gathered themselves together with one accord to fight with Joshua and with Israel. Beyond the Jordan is the land that's on the west side of the river. That's where the nation of Israel is taking this land. Jericho is on the west side of the river beyond Jordan from where that when they were on the east side. In the hill country, that means the land that is in the mountains. None of the mountains in the promised land are very large. In this case, the writer means the mountains in that central part of the promised land. When he says in the lowlands, it means the lower flatlands. When you're coming down off of those mountains to the western side, you come down to the hills, that's the flatlands as it comes down, going towards the coast of the Great Sea. And then when the coast of the Great Sea towards Lebanon is mentioned, it's all the Great Sea, all the way up and down, all the way up to Lebanon. It's the Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea. And you travel from Gilgal, go straight west, you're going to hit the Great Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, and all that coastline, all the way up to Lebanon. That's where the tribal areas are mentioned, and that's the extent, all the way from the coast up towards Lebanon. The mention of Lebanon is to provide a direction, not a destination. Lebanon is considered a neighbor of the northern promised land. They're not going to reach the northern promised land yet. They're going right through the middle central section right now. And the passage tells us of these Canaanite tribes in central Canaan land being the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Now the Hittites and the Amorites are on the west side of the Dead Sea. The Jebusites are above the Hittites and the Amorites. From the Jordan going west to the coast of the Great Sea, you see it is see the tribes laying out like this. From the Jordan River, it's the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, and then there's another group of Canaanites. All of these tribes are part of the descendants of the man by the name of Canaan and his original Canaanite tribe. Each town in each of these tribal areas has their own king of its own, kind of like a mayor. The king's like a mayor, but he's the king of the town. And all the kings of these tribes bound together to fight against the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel is not going against just Ai and Bethel or just Jericho here. They're going against the entire armies of all these tribal areas. The sheer volume of men of war bound together in this alliance will surely outnumber the nation of Israel many times over. Well, when they've bound together, there's a hiccup going on. Jericho and Ai were Canaanite towns in the tribal area next to the Jordan River. Just west of the Canaanite area, we come to that Hittite area. And in the tribal setting of the Hittites, there is a town by the name of Gibeon. The nation of Israel had not ventured into the Hittite area, and as such, it was unfamiliar with the people of the Hittites altogether. But the news of Israel's success against Jericho and Ai hit all these Canaanite lands, and it included the Hittites, and it included the people in the town of Gibeon, and Gibeon's people feared. The writer tells us of their plan of deception in verse number 3. When the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, they also acted craftily and set out as envoys and took worn out sacks on their donkeys and wineskins worn out and torn and mended and worn out and patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes on themselves. And all the bread of their provisions was dry and had become crumbled. So, these Gibeonites have a plan. And once the plan is in place, the writer tells us of the process of deception. First we hear their lie comes with a request. They've showed up. They're talking to Joshua and to the people. Verse number 6. They went to Joshua to the camp of Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now therefore make a covenant with us." Well, covenants were big deals in that day. Yes, they were. If a covenant was made, it was binding, even if that covenant was made in deception, by deceptive means. Such was the case with the Gibeonites, who portrayed themselves as non-Canaanites, not part of those tribes. The Lord had ordered that all Canaanites be destroyed. However, all other nations could live in a covenant if a covenant was made and the foreign nation agreed with Israel's belief. So they're thinking that this is a non-Canaanite group. But the request that they have made comes with a caution from the nation of Israel. Verse number 7. The men of Israel said to the Hittites, "Perhaps you are living within our land. How then shall we make a covenant with you?" They couldn't make a covenant. Not supposed to. They're supposed to kill the Canaanites. Something was telling the men of Israel that these poor beggars may not be from a distant land. They questioned if the covenant was a wise thing to do or not. Nevertheless, the caution comes with a promise to Joshua. But they said to Joshua, verse 8a, "We are your servants." So, the promise to be the servants of Israel will strike an uneasiness in Joshua. So this promise to Joshua comes with an inquiry in verse 8b. Then Joshua said to them, Who are you and where do you come from? These poor beggars are now in a situation with Joshua. They must think quickly. Well, because of Joshua, the inquiry of Joshua now becomes a story, and it's not a short story, in verse number 9. So they said to him, that's to Joshua, your servants have come from a very far country because of the fame of the Lord your God. For we have heard the report of him and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. So our elders and all our inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, take provisions in your hand for your journey, and go to meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Now then, make a covenant with us. This our bread was warm when we took it for our possessions out of our houses on the day that we left to come to you. But now behold, it is dry and has become crumbled. These wineskins were filled, were new, and behold, they are torn. And these our clothes and our sandals are worn out because of the very long journey. Well, the story covered all the bases, all the way down to the wineskins, the clothes, the sandals, the bread that is crumbling and old and hard. It seemed reasonable. So here we find this story that they have just told comes with a covenant. Exactly what these Gibeonian beggars wanted, they're going to get in verse number 14. So the men of Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. Bad news, should have done that. Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the leaders of the congregation swore an oath to them. Not one word was asked of the Lord about this covenant. Not one word. Joshua moved to make peace without one prayer. Not one prayer. If they had just sought the Lord, he would have told them. After all, this kind of covenant was approved for all non-Canaanites. They're non-Canaanites because they told us they were. These men did not present themselves as Canaanites. Had they presented themselves as Canaanites, the order was to destroy them. Well, the covenant that was made there now comes with a problem. The covenant comes with a problem, verse number 16. It came about at the end of 3 days after they had made a covenant with them that they heard that they were neighbors and they were living within their land. In other words, somebody told the truth and it got around. The men were Canaanites of the Hittite tribe and it was a problem. They were supposed to be destroyed on the order of the Lord. What now? What could be done? A covenant of peace had been agreed upon. And so what happens is Joshua is going to march right over. The problem that came from finding out they were neighbors comes with a grumble, we might call it. Verse number 17. Then the sons of Israel set out and came to their cities on the third day. Went and found them. Now their cities were Gibeon and Chephirah and Beroth and Kiriath-Jearim. All Canaanite cities of the tribe of the Hittites. And the sons of Israel did not strike them because the leaders of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. And the whole congregation grumbled against the leaders. They had made a bad decision, and Israel grumbled. The descendants of Gibeon, the Hittite, lived in these four cities. The word Gibeon means hill city. Chephirah means the hamlet. Beroth means the well. Kiriath-Jearim means the city of forest. So you got an idea of what these cities were like, because the cities are always named after what they were like. All four are named just because of the major characteristics of that location. These four cities were safe from the Israelites because of the covenant. It did not make the people of Israel happy with what their leaders had done. But be that as it may, the grumble becomes a solution in verse number 19. But all the leaders said to the whole congregation, We have sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel, and now we cannot touch them. This we will do to them, even let them live, so that the wrath will not be upon us for the oath which we swore to them. The leaders said to them, let them live. So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water for the whole congregation, just as the leaders had spoken to them. Now, if you remember, the Gibeonites and all those four cities promised to be the servants of Israel if a covenant was made between the two. The problem is they didn't figure out how they were going to be the servants and what they were going to do. They didn't agree to that. So Joshua now has the opportunity to have a solution. Joshua says to the leaders of Israel, we're going to have a solution to this. We're going to make, in this covenant for them to be our servants, we're going to make them servants, and they're going to hew the wood, they're going to cut the wood, and they're going to draw the water for us. And let me tell you something. Those were the lowest sorts of physical labor that you could ever have. Cutting wood and hauling water was hard work. And it's going to be hard work for all the Gibeonites and all those Hittites that made that covenant. So the solution comes with a curse. Verse number 22. Then Joshua called for them and spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us, saying, we are very far from you when you are living within our land? Now therefore you are cursed, and you shall never cease being slaves, both hewers of wood and drawers of water for the house of my God. So forever, all the men of these Gibeonites are going to be hewers of wood and drawers of water. It's a curse. They can never be or do anything else, at least until Israel falls into exile in 722 BC. 702 years later into the future, they're going to still be hauling water and cutting wood. So the curse comes with a conviction. The curse comes with conviction in verse number 24. So they answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told your servants that the Lord your God had commanded his servants Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land before you, therefore we feared greatly for our lives because of you and have done this thing. Now therefore we are in your hands. Do as it seems good and right in your sight to do to us. The translation of the answer of conviction is this. The Gibeonites would live even though they were Canaanites and were commanded by the Lord to die. They had accomplished their goals to live. Any servant's job for the Gibeonites underneath that curse is better than death. All generations of Gibeonites to come for at least 702 years will fall under this restriction of this covenant. Finally, the conviction comes with a confinement in verse number 26. Thus he did to them and delivered them from the hands of the sons of Israel, and they did not kill them. But Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord to this day in the place which he would choose. So the curse that is placed on the Gibeonite was great from the very first day. They're going to be these cutters of wood and they're going to draw buckets of water for the congregation of Israel. First in every town, in every city, in Israel's tribal area, the Gibeonites would be assigned to serve the people, the congregation, across the whole nation. Second, the Gibeonites would provide water and wood for all the altars of the Lord in the place which he would choose. Now the phrase, in the place which he would choose, has not been used in this record in Joshua till this point. Still, it was used regularly over in Leviticus and Deuteronomy in preparation for the Promised Land. See, in the Promised Land, the tribes would be so spread out that the that one central place of worship at a tabernacle would be absolutely impossible. The travel would be too far. Therefore, in preparation to enter the Promised Land, the Lord foretold that He would choose four cities in each tribal area, 48 in all, to be the local places for worship and for the offering of the tithes and also the offerings that would be brought instead of bringing them down to a central location. My stars, if it was at your 80 miles from where the tabernacle is, you'd be spending all day trying to get there for 3 or 4 days, and then all day trying to get turned around and come back. You'd always be on the road. So the Lord knew this. So He put these 48 cities where the Levites would be stationed to accept the gifts and disperse them out from there to the needs of other people for the sustaining of the Levitical families and also for the widows and for the orphans. So the Gibeonites would be assigned job duties for wood and water, even in those holy places chosen by the Lord. Now, here's what we've got going on here. The Lord is choosing them because, and Joshua has cursed them for this very reason. They had tricked Israel. But the thing that was worse is the nation of Israel had not reached out to the Lord and prayed about it. Folks, when you come up with a decision that needs to be made, don't jerk it from the hip or do a knee-jerk reaction to make a decision. The lesson that we have here is bathe it in prayer. Because if you don't bathe it in prayer, you may make a covenant or an oath which the Lord will require you to keep, even though it is against His law. Be in God's perfect will by asking Him to give you an answer.